Welcome to the Open House podcast site, available at openhousecommunity.com.au.
I have no doubt there are thousands in our Open House community who've sponsored a child in need overseas. There are many, many programs and schemes where the promise is we can reach out and give a helping hand to a needy child, and often their family. There's no end of those kinds of needs in our world. $3 billion worth of sponsorship goes to 9 million children a year. But here's a question that's often asked: does it actually work? Is the support we offer really making a difference in these children's lives? There's also the question about whether the money is better spent on entire communities rather than selectively, where some children, yes, they benefit, but many don't. Well, we now have a few answers to those kinds of questions with a major study undertaken by the University of San Francisco. And alongside that, you may have your own experience of all the people in our Open House community who sponsor a child. What difference have you been able to make? We'd love to know about your sponsored child, who they are, where they are, and how you've been able to help. Maybe you're one of the many people who've been able to visit them and see firsthand the difference that this kind of sponsorship makes. We'd love you to tell us your story on 1300 40 2020. Now, the BBC has taken a great interest in this report from the University of San Francisco. One of its World Affairs correspondents, Emily Buchanan, has been working through the results and some of the answers to those questions. And Emily joins us now from London. Emily, welcome.
Good evening.
Wonderful to have you on the program. Thanks, Emily. Tell us about where this study was done and how did they go about researching these questions? What countries did they look at?
Well, interestingly, it is one of the very, very few, if not the only, major study into the impact of child sponsorship that there's been. And it was independently funded, so it wasn't funded by any particular charity. They interviewed over 10,000 adults, comparing those who had been sponsored by a charity called Compassion and comparing them to their peers who hadn't been sponsored. The countries they looked at were Bolivia, Guatemala, India, Kenya, the Philippines, and Uganda. It was extremely wide-ranging, and it was very interesting that they could look at this sort of comparative outcome, because that's really the only way you can try and assess whether a child, having been sponsored or not, whether that actually makes a difference to their lives.
Yes. So how are the impacts on these sponsored children measured? I mean, what difference did they find this help made, and what did they show?
Well, I mean, they looked at things like, you know, how long they stayed in education and what sort of jobs they had at the end of it all. And they found that the sponsored children stayed in school longer than their non-sponsored peers and were more likely to have white-collar jobs and also more likely to be leaders in their communities and churches. So if they came from an agricultural community, which many did, and perhaps their prospects would normally to have been some sort of labourer, they would have found that those sponsored children were more likely to become, say, teachers or community leaders or some other white-collar profession, which is very interesting. And in fact, in Uganda, it was particularly striking, the impact. The sponsored children were 42% more likely to finish secondary education than those who weren't part of the program, and 83% more likely to actually complete university.
The experts you talked to about these results were really surprised by the degree of impact.
Well, that's right. I mean, it's interesting. I spoke to the professor in charge of this, Dr. Bruce Wydick, from the University of San Francisco. And one of the first things he said was, as a development economist, I'm actually used to seeing very modest outcomes from aid programs. That's probably a story in itself. But
yes,
he was surprised at the sort of clarity of the results and the size of the impact on these children.
As you said, the work Compassion does, with a clear Christian framework driving its work, was under the microscope. And he had some observations about that aspect of this aid as well.
Yes, that's right. I mean, it's interesting because I think he hadn't intended just to do the study just on Compassion, but other agencies hadn't wanted to take part, partly because their models are very different and they focus more on whole communities rather than just picking out individual children. But certainly, he also did another study looking at children who are currently being sponsored to try and find out what the sort of, whether there was a kind of real impact from the spiritual side. And he concluded that the element of hope and aspiration has been hugely underrated in development work. And, you know, that it wasn't just a matter of paying for school uniforms and getting the kids into school, that there was something about the spiritual mentoring that gave these children more aspiration to achieve. And he thinks there should be a lot more research into that, a sort of, how, you know, how do you actually quantify this difference in attitude? He, in fact, he did some quite interesting experiments getting children to draw what it's like being in a rainstorm. One group of children would draw themselves sort of getting very wet and looking rather miserable, and a lot of the children who were being sponsored put up an umbrella and looked quite happy in the rain.
That's interesting.
So these sorts of things, trying to look at actually the sort of psychological impact on children of feeling that they had, I mean, this is what compassion says, that they think the actual knowledge that a child has that someone across the other side of the world actually really cares for them, you know, doesn't just send a sort of postcard once a year, but really cares, does make a difference to that child.
It's interesting because these groups will often come under criticism for allegedly proselytizing, but this doctor says that he's found kids with a sense of hope. It's actually good for them.
Well, yes. I mean, you're getting onto, you know, tricky ground, because obviously some people feel that these children are being pressurized, in a sense, into adopting Christian beliefs. I mean, in fact, when I went to Ghana to look at the whole sponsorship issue, we interviewed a Muslim family who where the child was being sponsored by Compassion. And, you know, I asked the child and the mother, you know, how do you feel about the fact that your child is sort of going to church every day? And, you know, they were, obviously, for them, it was just, they thought it was wonderful. And they were saying, well, you know, the Bible and the Quran, they're all the same. And they were being very hopeful. But I think that some people would criticize that. Children, once they're in the Compassion program, don't really have much choice about what religion they follow. And a lot of agencies, a lot, and most of them, the big ones really, have moved away from this idea of picking out one child from a community and giving them lots of attention. They've focused much more on community projects, and they certainly wouldn't agree with the religious aspect.
So what about that question? Because it's an often debated question about whether sponsoring some children and not others is the right way to go, and not spending the money across entire communities. If we look at this study, what kind of conclusions can we reach about that question?
Well, it's tricky because, you know, other agencies haven't taken part. They haven't done a comparative study on villages. Like, you know, here's a village where, say, World Vision or Plan International or one of the other agencies has done projects, and we compare it to a neighbouring village which hasn't. You know, what are the outcomes of the children in the different villages? You know, that study hasn't really been done properly. So I don't think one can just say, well, you know, Compassion is the only model that works. But I suppose what Compassion would argue is that its aid is always selective. You know, you can never give to everybody. You know, equally, if you sponsor a village, you could say, well, what about the neighboring village? Why can't they have some help? You know, it's almost impossible not to be selective and for some people to benefit more than others. So why not just do your best for one child in a particular family, perhaps the most needy child, and bring them up? It is an ongoing and debate that won't end because of this study.
Oh, no. One of the feelings that you have when you sponsor a child is, I just send this money away and I know little about how it's being spent and it's just gone. But as you said before, there is a sense that if a child knows that someone else on the other side of the world is caring for them, that really matters.
I think that's right. I think that relationship, which the sponsor often wants, I mean, that's why you sponsor a child rather than just send a check to the charity. But I think what's happened is that because people have seen that relationship as in some way divisive and unfair for the other children in the community, I mean, when we were in Ghana, you know, we saw one family that had been sponsored and had moved out of the village and built themselves a nice new house, you know, and you sort of think, well, how come that one family gets the benefit? So what other agencies are doing is sort of diluting that relationship more. So although they still send a picture, and you get news about your sponsored child, the reality is that your money is being spread much more thinly across a community, and perhaps it's going towards building a well or building a school. But then that does raise the question from the sponsor's point of view, what is your relationship with that child? We actually were in a village in Ghana, and we watched a little boy receive a brown envelope from his sponsor, you know, and he'd had maybe three or four communications in about 7 or 8 years, and there was a little postcard inside, and you could see he was rather crestfallen, and he said, oh, I'd really like to have a football or a skipping rope. but he was told quite firmly by the organizers of the project, well, we're not allowed, you know, they're not allowed to send gifts, and you're not allowed to request gifts, because that would be favoritism. It's so difficult because, of course, people want to be egalitarian, but then, you know, that individual child, you sort of wonder, well, what are they getting out of that relationship? And equally, what's the sponsor getting out? What a lot of the big agencies now say is, you know, child sponsorship is actually quite a sort of expensive to administer form of aid. You know, it takes a lot of money to form these relationships and send the letters back and forth and so on. And actually, donors should be more mature and just give money and not need this relationship. You know, then you look at the compassion situation and you say, well, actually, on an individual basis, that is working both for the sponsor and the child.
And especially with one woman you spoke with as part of looking at this study, she kind of embodies a lot of the results of this, a woman supported as a child by compassion.
Yes, that's right. She's actually living in the UK now. This is someone called Peace Ruharuza, who's running a charity now called Fountain of Peace. She grew up in rural Uganda as one of 14 children. She worked as a domestic helper. And at 9 years old, she was chosen, presumably because she was seen to be the most needy. I mean, compassion does try and sort of focus on the children they think need help. She joined a compassion program and was sponsored by a Canadian family. And she's absolutely convinced that this was the best way to help her. You know, she says, it gave me a new lease of life and helped me become what I am and to change other people around me. I mean, she's now helping more children. She's been able to help other members of her family. You know, she says you have to invest in a child if you really want to change things. So she will still support the sort of individual one-to-one sponsorship model.
Yes, hers is a great case study and a fascinating study addressing quite a few of these very significant questions. Emily Buchanan, very much appreciate your time. Thanks very much for joining us on Open House.
I enjoyed it. Thank you.
We hope you enjoyed this Open House podcast. To hear more from Open House, visit openhousecommunity.com.au.